Welcome to Ben Benet, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Tyrion 11 of A Storm of Swords, a big chapter for a little man. Was that wrong, Matt? Should I not have said that?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
That's okay.
I don't want to get you out of pocket.
That's okay.
You know what we should lead off with, though?
What's that?
Happy birthday to Sir Matthew Perry.
Happy birthday.
I mean, maybe him and Sir Ryan are probably the two, I mean, have to be among the top 10 longest people to the podcast. And you know, I hope this year works out for Sir Matthew Perry. As a Vikings fan, he's had it a bit rough.
Yeah, I think this year's going to be a bit rough, too.
I think I'm saying
under 7 wins.
Jeez, sorry Matt if you're listening to this.
Well, you know, I saw this thing that said, now we're a sports podcast, I saw this thing that said that like 2 years ago Sam Darnold was the starter and he wore number 14 and had 14 wins. Last year JJ McCarthy was the starter, wore number 9, had 9 wins. This year it's going to be Kyler Murray and he wears number 1.
Not looking good.
Not looking good.
But at least he still has Westeros. So happy birthday, Sir Matthew Perry. If you're listening, he's a couple episodes behind.
How's Jimmy doing?
Should I talk in third person? He's doing well. Jimmy is working a lot. Jimmy's golfing a lot.
It's good.
Yeah, and you know, just thinking about Thrones, man. Thinking about A Song of Ice and Fire constantly, and thinking about this reread we're about to do of, you know, Feast and Dance and Boiled Leather combination.
That's excited. And a combo of their Game of Thrones rewatch over on Patreon. I've seen lots of people sign up.
Yeah, I will be watching episode 2 finally this week. So hopefully next week we can get that out. It's exciting. And House of the Dragons around the corner. I mean, we got a lot of stuff going on. Obviously, the Feast and Dance reread are going to be post House of the Dragon season 2, but I've had a couple people saying, hey, I'm about to reread Feast. I'm like, well, hold on now.
I know. I've been
wait coming. A second.
I always pop into your live stream on mm-hmm. Chatting with Nuts, which Jimmy does every other Friday, essentially, like 4:30 Pacific. So that's what, 7:30, right? This time.
7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Yes.
Yeah, always a good time. Sometimes you have guests on. You're just always talking. You just read a lot of books.
I read a shit ton of books, Matt. Yeah.
That's what it seems like.
And I read more than fantasy now too. I mean, I read sci-fi, but I read a little bit of everything, you could say.
What are you reading these days?
Right now, actually, I've been having trouble concentrating because I've been so busy. So I needed something that I could just kick back and enjoy on audiobook. And I'm listening to Revival by Stephen King, which a good amount of people say is the last good book Stephen King ever wrote. I disagree personally, but it's pretty dark. It's really, yeah, really dark. And let me tell you something. Stephen King loves car wrecks. He uses car accidents in his books more than anybody else ever. He
Is
loves
that what
car
happens
accidents.
In I yes. remember that there was the Dead Zone. I'm not sure. I haven't read it a lot, but the Dead Ooh. Zone. I remember there was like a TV show, and I think he.
I watched a TV show. I watched
there
a TV show.
There was a TV show. And what could he do? He knew when people were going to die or something like that. And he was
yeah,
trying
that
to save
sounds
them.
Familiar.
That
yeah. I was pretty young when that came out. Was that on TBS or TNT or something?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Hey, rest in peace, Ted Turner, by the way. Ted Turner.
Seriously. WCW. He created CNN, the Weather Channel. He was also kind of like philanthropist. He owned a bunch of land to have it preserved. So
I just assume he's probably been to an island. So yeah, I'm not going to put any.
That's he could be.
It seems like these wealthy people really like islands, Matt.
Unfortunately, so this kind of we don't know. I don't know. I haven't looked at any of it. I don't know.
I mean, that's a wild accusation.
It's hard to look at any of it because it's all redacted.
It's true.
Just like Wins a Winner. If you tried to go read it right now, it's probably George is just.
It's like the World of Ice and Fire. Where they spilled ink.
Yeah.
On the summer hall section.
Yeah. What am I reading right now? Well, I'm always reading A Song of Ice and Fire because it is peak and it is pinnacle. I'm reading a lot of Clifford, the big red dog. Clifford.
Oh, you have a daughter. I actually
yes.
forgot.
Yeah. I have a 2-year-old. And people are, yeah, it's, you know, once you have a kid, and I have like, you know, a 2-year-old, and you think about like the books you're reading, it's like, dude, I read like 30 books today. Okay. I've read Bluey. I've read Clifford Goes to School, Clifford's First Halloween, Clifford Barks at the Mailman, Clifford Takes a Bath. I read all of those
Disney dog
today. Okay.
Today.
I'm pretty sure at this point, what book have I read the most in my life? I mean, it might be like Clifford Barks at the Mailman and the people in the street and the cat and the phone.
Why is he red, Matt?
He's a big red dog.
He's just a big red dog.
Actually, we're reading the Clifford Puppy Days. We seem to be much bigger on when Clifford was a puppy.
Big puppy people.
Yeah, well, he's a little puppy. He is a normal sized puppy, and then he turns into a big dog.
So what do you think that is? Like high protein intake or?
I don't know. Man, I don't know. I will say, what else am I reading? Oh, I vicariously through my wife am reading like Sarah J. Maas or Mass or whatever, because every time I get in the car, it always, the Bluetooth syncs. And so I'm reading all of the fantasy.
Oh man.
Is it fantasy spice or is it fantasy smut? I mean,
it's not really like an insult anymore. I don't think so.
I will say the only thing that weirds me out about these fantasy smut novels
is the
not that they exist, you know, like the fact that they exist and ladies have that outlet, after it, have fun, that's great. Yeah. Right. I will say the recommending these books to friends, which I hear all the time, like that's kind of weird. That's kind of like, is that kind of like sharing your kink with people? Like, you know, you seem like the kind of girl who'd be down to get railed by three elves at once. I mean,
oh my God.
It's just weird, dude. I'm just saying.
Elves.
Yeah, man.
Oh my.
I mean, you're more into this realm than I am with these people. You know, all the people you bring on your book show.
Hey, here's the thing then. In some of these cases, what you see is people start out with the smuttier romanticy stuff and they end up jumping into something else. And listen, folks, the 1960s to the 90s, there was a lot of male gaze, a lot of oogly eyes at chest and braids and all these other things. So let us not pretend there wasn't some wish fulfillment for 4 decades in male fantasy.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think people give it a hard time. Another thing, and this is more of like a, I guess, a serious, well, not really serious, but more of a bland note. I see a lot of people like upset that romanticy is selling so well and it takes up so much of the bookstore. What people don't realize is when a Fourth Wing or whatever sells a bazillion copies, that subsidizes so many other authors to get picked up and signed. Like without those, like it's like Harry Potter, right, for instance. I can't even imagine how many authors were subsidized by the success of that series. Now, are they using it to do other romance? Yes, for sure. But not all of it. Sure. We need these type of things. It doesn't matter if you like them or not, but if you want publishing to continue to exist because reading is not popular, especially among the young people, we need these type of things. So embrace the elf threesome, right, or whatever.
Right. The women who are in love, you know.
Oh, I know a lot of guys.
I'm in love with Rustoff, the dark elf, but I'm betrothed to Kegeldor of the Sky Kingdom.
Kegeldor's crazy. Okay, I mean, that's nuts. We're talking pelvic floors now.
Okay, I'm just saying, like
Kegel.
Every time I get in the car, that's like what it, which is fine because, you know, hey, we're here reading A Song of Ice and Fire and it's kink is incest, so what's that say about us? I mean, I don't know. Whoa. I mean, Jimmy's is from West Virginia here. I mean,
whoa. All right, this is low. This is a new low for you, Matt. How dare,
I mean,
you?
Does that say something about George? I mean, you know, I don't know, maybe he's really ahead of the curve on that one. Is that you just realized that in, you know, 2020 and it's all going to turn to fantasy romance?
Listen, I think that George is a bit voyeuristic, unfortunately, with a lot of his sex scenes. But the Cersei ones are fantastic because it's her just being unhinged in that context.
That's true.
Like in we'll get there. But in the next two books, Cersei loses her ever-loving mind. And yeah, it's maybe my favorite part of the whole series as far as character focus goes. It's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my thoughts on the week. I don't know.
Now that 90% of people have turned off the show.
It's okay. Actually, but people message me. They say they love our opening segment. You know, they're not always listening to the chapter rereads because they're either with, you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, everything else. Oh, yeah. Here's another just while we're on this topic real quick. So we are, Jimmy and I are doing our Patreon rewatch of Game of Thrones. And so I was watching the episode today in case we could record it tonight, episode 2 of Game of Thrones. And there is a scene where Daenerys and Khal Drogo are together. And I forgot that I had an HVAC appointment today. And so I'm telling you, the like HVAC guy parks the driveway. I'm like sitting on the couch, computer open. And I'm like, you know, kind of like doing some like typing and, you know, like looking at looking at social media and stuff like that. I mean, he looks right in the window and there's Daenerys Targaryen, like face just. The whole thing. And I'm just like, and then he just like comes to the door and it's just real awkward.
He said, aren't you Matt from Bend the Knee?
Oof. Jeez.
That's a tough scene for you. That's tough.
It's real tough. Just like
you need to buy some curtains. That could be the difference.
Well, you know, we actually have this we have this like film, like it's almost like a two-way film where like we can see out but people can't see in, but if you're like right up against it you can definitely see in. So there was a silence when he opened the door. when I opened the door, there was a dramatic pause. So
they're gonna call you the pervert of Portland. That's your
you'd have to really be something to get called that. Okay,
yeah, you're not even on the roster yet.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah, you're not making practice squad.
So anyway, that's what's going on. I don't think, let me see here real quick before we dive into the chapter. I still don't think George has not posted anything since February 19th.
Oh, dude, I'm still stuck on you getting caught watching a Daenerys scene. I mean, that is outrageous.
Oh, I know. What your thoughts on the trailer? I did the trailer reaction, yeah.
I thought it looked amazing. You know, we could talk about the same music, the visuals. I did think that they're concealing a lot of the bigger moments, aren't they? Agreed. Like even the battle stuff.
You know, what's funny is that they called it like, initially they were saying a House of the Dragon trailer. And then I watched it. I was like, I felt like that was a teaser. And I kind of feel like there was a little bit of pushback. And then like when I went the next day to post the episode, the recording that I did reaction, and I saw that a bunch of people were that it felt like suddenly things had changed to teaser trailer,
because
I was like, man, it was kind of short. And so I mean, again, I'm still in the same mindset. This is what I said in the episode, where I'm just like is it gonna be good? Yes, it looks good, but I'm still just the palette shift of a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms to this is just, it's kind of tough.
It is tough, but I think we should just rejoice that there's multiple palettes at all.
Agreed.
You know, like even Game of Thrones, going back and watching episode one, I was like, man, and I know the show grows and gets better, but still very different. Very, very different. House of the Dragon, I think, has a lot more color than Game of Thrones did, which is a good thing in my opinion. Here's the thing. I don't really like trailers because one, modern trailers, I get flustered when I talk. It makes me so mad. Modern trailers will give away an entire movie.
Yes.
I love horror movies, dude. I never watch a horror movie trailer, not once, because they ruin all of it.
That's why I really hate when I'm watching a show, the like preview. Like I didn't watch any of them for Night of the Seven Kingdoms. Like, yeah, I don't want to see any of the previews. Yeah.
I did that. Remember, I did that during House of the Dragon season one when I was just on here with you and Ez.
I did watch the House of the Dragon
season. You one. Did. And then I got crap in the comments about it.
Yeah.
Like, you're not a real fan if you're not watching the preview. I'm like, I don't want to know what's coming. I want to be completely blind going into this. I mean, I know what the story beats are, but man, Crab Feeder was so good.
So good. Yeah, I mean, the trailer, it looks good. Like, I mean, it looks good. I'm excited for it. I mean, it looks like we're going to open with a big battle. I have no doubt that the season's going to be good, but I'm just not there yet. I'm just not like super excited for it. I'm sure I will be.
Wait till the intro hits.
As we get closer, I will be, and especially now with our Game of Thrones rewatch on Patreon and stuff, I'm okay, getting more into the Game of Thrones
mindset.
Yeah, let's dive more into that.
Yeah, and also, I don't know, this is the main thing I pulled from the trailer, other than the fact that I was like, they're being a little cagey about giving away big moments here. The other thing, though, Matt, is maybe we have forgotten, because of the controversy of the way season two ended, the performances in this show are outstanding.
Insane.
I just think it's some of the best on TV. Obviously, Night of the Seven Kingdoms is up there, as well as The Pit. Though some of the secondary actors, like these, like, you know, couple episode actors, like Patience, they can be a little rough on The Pit, I'll be honest with you.
I agree. The performances
are great.
I still say I think this is the only show that stands a chance at taking down The Pit for any award. Because I don't really watch Euphoria, but I've started seeing clips of it for some reason, and everyone is saying that this current season is like trash.
Yeah, but we know that after the first season of every show, it just becomes deceptive.
I don't know. Everyone's like really pretty rough on this season of it.
And well, there's a huge layoff between the seasons too. And then there's supposedly on scene. I don't know anything about the show. I just know that there's like a conflict between two of the actresses and they aren't on set at this. I don't know.
I don't know enough about it. But I will say, and then The Boys, it's final season, which is good. I don't know that it's like great, amazing. Some people are, on the Reddit crowd seems to be pretty disappointed in it, but it's hard to tell.
I got a show for you, Matt, and for everyone listening. My friend John told me about it. It's called Widow's Bay on Apple TV.
Okay.
And it's like these people live on an island off the east coast of America. And weird things are happening, and there's a mist enclosing the island, and it stars the dad from The Americans. I always forget his name. He's one of my favorite actors. So the show is very mysterious, a little spooky. I would say it's kind of horror-esque, but it's also hilarious. It is somewhat of a comedy, and it has really got my attention. The first three or four episodes are out on Apple TV. Plus, I highly recommend it if you all haven't seen it.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we get it. I have to get Apple TV. I do not have it currently, but Ted Lasso is coming.
You're killing it.
Ted Lasso season four is coming back. So, all right. Sign me up.
I think Apple TV, as far as like pound for pound goes, could be the best. Like, they don't release as much as everyone else, but when they release something, it's good. Blackbird on there is one of the greatest performances I've ever seen any actor give. Like, it's ridiculous how good the performance is from the serial killer in that. It's so good.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we're done with all of that,
we always do a little meat. I like it. I don't really talk about stuff I watch anywhere else. You know, I don't talk about on Chatting with Nuts very often, and I don't talk about anyone in real life. So, and I sure as hell am not talking about it on the internet. Like, as far as like, text goes, not a chance.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're gonna dive into arguably
the most infamous chapter, other than Red Wedding, probably. Peak
chapter. I mean, this might be I love the opening Jamie chapter, but I mean, this might be like the best chapter of this book, which is
the Red Wedding. Pretty good.
The Red Wedding is pretty good.
Reigns of
Cast. Yeah, I think I like this one more.
I wouldn't argue with you, but for me, it's the drum beating and the Reigns of Castamere. Sure. It's just like it's vibe.
The problem is, I'm rooting for the main, you know, the character.
Right.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one is like, damn, you're gonna lose.
Yeah, that's fair.
Here we go. Tyrion 11. Tyrion, locked in the black cells beneath the Red Keep, is rescued by Jaime. His brother tells him that he is to be beheaded on the morrow, and informs him that he coerced Varys into helping him charter a ship to take Tyrion from King's Landing. When Jaime tells him that the rescue was a debt owed by him, Tyrion presses his brother and learns that Tysha was in fact not a whore, but a crofter's daughter, just as she appeared. Lord Tywin had forced Jaime all those years to lie about Tysha so as to teach Tyrion a lesson. Tyrion is infuriated that his brother never told him the truth and punches Jaime in the face. Tyrion warns him that he will exact revenge against him, their father, and Cersei, as a Lannister always pays his debts. Jaime then asks if Tyrion poisoned Joffrey, and lying in his anger, he admits to doing so. He also tells Jaime that Cersei is sleeping with Lancel, Sir Osmond Kettleblack, and the summary says, and perhaps others, but we know one of the others is Moon Boy. And that Joffrey would have been a monster worse than Aerys if he had remained king. Tyrion walks off without a further word and confronts Varys for his betrayal. The eunuch concedes that he cannot find a trace of Sansa, then leads him deeper down to the fourth level where Maegor had built torture chambers. When they come to a circular tower chamber with a ladder leading up, Tyrion realizes it leads all the way to the Tower of the Hand. Commanding Varys to wait for him, Tyrion ascends the wickedly high ladder. It leads to a secret passage behind the rooms in the tower, perfect for Varys's little birds to overhear everything going on in the Hand's quarters. He opens the secret door to his old chamber and finds Shae naked in his father's bed, with the Hand's chain around her neck. The whore pleads that the queen made her say all of those things against him in court, but Tyrion strangles her with the chains as he once wore.
Damn.
So good. Grabbing a crossbow off the wall, he finds his father in the privy. Tywin commands him to put down the crossbow, promising that he had no intention of carrying out the sentence and would allow Tyrion to take the black. Disbelieving his father, Tyrion questions him as to what become of Tysha. Lord Tywin reveals he did not have her killed and does not know exactly what became of her. Tywin says he supposed the steward sent the whore on her way. Tyrion asks where the steward might have sent her, and Tywin replies, wherever whores go. Tyrion fires the crossbow, sending the bolt into his father's pelvis, killing Lord Tywin.
And he, woo, in fact, did not shit gold.
He did not.
One of the best lines. For sure. Dude, this chapter, I'm going to give it up for the summary that's written here, which is from the wiki. It does a really good job of choosing words from the story where it's dark. Like, it's really dark. Like, the chain he once wore strangling her, and just like being there in that moment, and just a back to back to back shitstorm for Tyrion.
Literally
at the end. Yeah. it did not go well for Tywin at all. The Pepto did not work, but what a chapter. Obviously this is one of the biggest divergences of the show. And I think kind of where the show started to lose its footing a little bit as far as being faithful to the source material. And in my opinion, I hate to say this, but I feel like the Tyrion character never really recovers in the TV show after. I mean, Peter Dinklage is great and there's some good moments, but they really lost his character arc here. So when you read this in the book, man, it just changes every, if you're a show only watcher, it changes everything.
Yeah. I mean, this scene in the show is very, I would say it's very good, but I agree with you. From this moment on is definitely, Tyrion is not walking down the same path. He's much more depressed, and he also runs into young Griff. So, I mean, talk about a totally different. Like, everything we see that Tyrion does, like, I mean, that could just be all stuff that he was supposed to do with young Griff, not Daenerys.
Yeah, and obviously the Penny thing is massive, but Whenever George R. R. Martin said that Tyrion's clearly a villain, it was in an interview a while ago. I think from this moment on, it becomes very obvious that Jaime and Tyrion are intersecting on their decline and incline, whereas Jaime is actually becoming a bit of a hero, I guess we'll call him in kind of simple terms. And Tyrion is going from hero to villain. So they're kind of flip-flopping. And the ironic thing is that Jaime tells the truth here and then Tyrion lies. And I think prior to this, we would expect Tyrion to tell the truth and Jaime to be the liar. That's very interesting. Tysha, where is she? I know some people question whether or not we'll see her. I actually don't think we will. I think it makes the world it makes the world too small if you do that, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
So
All right. Well, I have a bunch of highlights in this chapter, so just kind of, I don't know, going to focus on the things that stuck out to me. And
yeah, my bad. I kind of machine gun right there. I just love
No, that's fine. That's great. That's what we're doing here. So I just have a little bit here. It's like the third or fourth paragraph. Right once Jaime meets him. So he says, for a moment, Tyrion could not breathe. You, well, most of me, Jaime, was gaunt, his hair hacked short. I left a hand at Harrenhal. Bringing the brave companions across the narrow sea was not one of father's better notions. He lifted his arm and Tyrion saw the stump. A bark of hysterical laughter burst from his lip. Oh, gods, he said, Jaime, I'm so sorry, but gods be good. Look at the two of us, handless and noseless, the Lannister boys. There were days when my hand smelled so bad, I wish I was noseless. Jaime lowered the torch so that the light bathed on his brother's face. An impressive scar. Tyrion turned away from the glare. That made me fight. They made me fight a battle without my big brother to protect me.
Yeah. And you kind of feel it here that the attachment that we've heard Tyrion, or the admiration Tyrion has for Jaime, is right on display right here, for sure. And I think in this moment, Jaime is being a good big brother.
Yeah.
It just ends up sending Tyrion into a rage.
Yeah. You know, and that, what that line actually got me thinking about, which is kind of in a different direction, slightly different direction, is in, we might get a trial by combat, right? If the game bowl happens, as you and I have talked about that with in the, as we go into Cersei's story in the next book, right? I mean, if Cersei does have to be put on trial by the faith and there does actually have to be a trial by combat, it could be another situation where Jaime feels like he can't protect Cersei. That would be, I think, a very cool, you know, just, I mean, to take this line right here from Tyrion and kind of reapply it. And that could, you know, that could be another cool little, that's a very George thing in his writing.
Yeah, he loves mirroring things.
Right. So like then like later on, it could be if Cersei does in fact have to have a trial, like she chooses to have a trial by combat and then she chooses the mountain over him. That would also, obviously, because, you know, he's not going to fight the trial by combat. She would most likely choose Robert Strong, who, you know, we believe to be the mountain. But if you then get to a similar scene, which I think could happen, the scene where she and Jaime kind of like break up there. It's in like season 7, I think. Right. Cause then Jaime goes to the wall in season 8, but remember it's like the mountain is the one who steps in front of him. Like, whoa, like that was actually one of the cooler scenes of season 7. to have that moment of like, okay, or maybe it was season 8. I can't remember, but it's towards,
I can't remember.
Yeah. It's right there. And that's why he ends up going to Winterfell. But if you had like one little line like that of Jaime realizing like, again, I wasn't able to protect Tyrion and now I'm not able to protect Cersei. And then if Marcella dies the same way she does in the show, if Joffrey dies, you could have this like moment for Jaime where he's thought about all the people he actually wasn't able to protect. And then maybe he's with Brienne and Brienne's whole thing is that she wants to protect the Starks. And maybe that's how those two, I don't think they're going to like romantically get together. I think
they might,
but I mean, like they'll like Jaime will go more with Brienne. I think that could be like this little line right here might be like the start of that.
I like that. I like that a lot. And I do think it would fit into the story for sure. I think I like the idea of him realizing everyone that he couldn't protect, because it almost exasperates the issue of him not protecting Ares and killing him, even though it was the right thing to do. And you could say
he's a Kingsguard. Like, that's his whole job.
Yeah, he failed at that. And also, I mean, Joffrey died while he was still a Kingsguard. So there's that. And maybe he loses Cersei or maybe he comes close to losing her and it drives him back to her. I don't think a circular arc is off the table. I know people hate that in the show. I'm not against it. I know people hate to hear that because Jaime becomes someone that we love so much, but he's addicted to Cersei. And a lot of time when people are addicted to something, they end up going back, especially when things get tough. So I kind of like that idea, though, of him not being able to protect and it driving him more towards Brienne. And I think they will get together. I think that is something that George would do.
Yeah. Okay, continue on just a little bit here. What kind of stuck out to me was actually just I'll pull up the Tysha stuff. So Jaime went to one knee and kissed him quickly on each cheek, his lips brushing against the puckered ribbon of scar tissue. "Thank you, brother," Tyrion said, "for my life. It was a debt I owed you." Jaime's voice was strange. "A debt?" Mm-hmm. He cocked his head. I don't understand. "Good. Some doors are best left close." "Oh dear," said Tyrion. "Is there something grim and ugly behind it? Could it be that someone said something cruel about me once? I'll try not to weep. Tell me." Tyrion. And then Tyrion's thinking, Jaime is afraid. "Tell me." He looked away. "Tysha. What of her? She was no whore. I never bought her for you. That was a lie that father commanded me to tell. Tysha was, she was what she seemed to be, a crofter's daughter chance met on the road." And then, you know, it goes into the whole Tysha story, which we talked about in the summary. But yeah, it is like this chapter is so great because, I mean, Tyrion is obviously the focus, but if you're doing, this is why I talk about like the POV reads where you kind of need to map out. And I can't believe nobody's ever done that. I tried to do it once and it's such a big undertaking.
It's a big task.
I still would love to do it at some point, but, you know, if you're doing Jaime's arc, like think about where Jaime's at in his story. Mm-hmm. Like, remember, Jaime has come back. He's now like, we saw him in the Kingsguard tower talking to those people, and you can feel like the shift in him where he's kind of being like, I want to do the right thing. I want to like restore the Kingsguard. I need to. And so like, as we're talking about his arc, he's trying to tell Tyrion here the right thing, even though he is freeing his brother, betraying his dad, and also betraying his sister, because his sister certainly believes that Tyrion is the one who killed Joffrey.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Tyrion thinks otherwise, or Jaime would probably clearly think otherwise. And then Tyrion, out of anger, says that.
And Jaime doesn't kill him right there.
Right. Yeah, the dynamic here is just so good. There's just there's so many different things happening at once. It's just so freaking phenomenal.
So here's a question, and this is kind of the thing that was on my mind. There's two big things on my mind as far as speculation goes and predicting the future. Do you think Tyrion ends up killing Jaime?
That is one of the things that I wasn't necessarily super against the way that Jaime and Cersei's end happened in the show. I wasn't like
minus the Euron thing.
Yeah, the Euron thing was totally stupid. But in a way, it did kind of fulfill like multiple prophecies at once. Like Jaime goes to get Cersei. So in a way, you could say it's like the Valonqar. Like, well, it could be Jaime because I mean, he goes and grabs her and they're running away and then, we're not getting out. And then they die. It also kind of fulfills Tyrion's thing right here where he says, like, I'll have I'll pay my debt on all you guys because he's counseling Daenerys. It also fulfills the younger, more beautiful queen. So my guess is that is probably the way that Cersei is, how she goes, is probably going to be like that. I don't think it's going to be like her on trial getting beheaded or anything. My guess is that even if it's at Casterly Rock, it's probably going to be pretty similar.
Yeah. But Jamie wise, do you think Jamie dies with her?
I don't know. Jamie's he's right there with Sansa and some of the other people that are so tough because his arc could go in any possible direction. And it's so dependent on what happens with like Sansa and the Faith and young Griff. And
Blackfish is also around Jamie.
Same yeah, name. Jamie. Jamie's arc. I really don't. He's another guy, another character. I have almost. It's hard to look at what happens in the show and apply that to Jamie at all.
Yeah. So I am beginning to think that Tyrion may end up killing Jamie, and I'll tell you why. I've said it on the podcast before, but I believe that Cersei will go to Castle Rock, and I actually think that Tyrion is going to rain down dragon fire upon it. I think I don't know if he'll kill her, but he'll destroy. I think there's a good chance he kills her, and I'm wondering if he will also kill Jaime, because whenever we have those early Tyrion chapters where he has talks about dragon dreams and everything else of him riding a dragon and burning Castle Rock to the ground, I mean, some really dark and destructive dreams and thoughts that Tyrion has. This is way before this moment, where we still think Tyrion's a good guy, a lot of imagery of him destroying his family. And to me, I don't think that it's a red herring. Like, I'm not saying he's a Targaryen. I don't think he's a Targaryen at all. But there is something to be said about him, about the team up with Daenerys, who does have dragons, and he has a lot of revenge on his mind. And if he is to continue down this villain arc, I can think of few little things that would make him more hateable to the audience, or at least confused about him, than him killing Jaime. Because I mean, he lies to Jaime right here, and it makes me like want to shake him. You know, why would you do that? Don't do it. So I just wonder, will Tyrion ever see Jaime again? And if he does, will he kill him? Does Tyrion kill Cersei and then Jaime kills Tyrion upon meeting him because he thinks he killed Joffrey and Cersei, and he killed his father.
Jaime was somebody who I remember going into season 8. A lot of people thought he was going to kill the Night King. I thought he was definitely up there for the people who potentially were going to kill him, just because the Kingslayer, and does it come back around to be something?
Dude, that would have been cool. Actually,
I know. Like, is he gonna, and then it's like this huge, like, mega redemption arc, and then he's the one to do it because he loses his hand, but now he has to fight. Like,
he kind of falls to the wayside once again, like a lot of characters did in this final series. They really just focused in on Jon Snow and Daenerys. I mean,
he does have the epic moment where he knights Brienne of Tarth.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, yes, him running the problem, like him running back to Cersei in theory, is something that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
the problem was the show season 8 really needed one more episode. I know some people
thought it needed a lot more episodes.
I still think one episode in between 3 and 4.
Well, they wasted an episode too. I mean, the episode after the Long Night is just a waste, essentially.
Episode 4 is the worst episode of the entire series of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, they just wasted an entire episode, essentially.
Well, because it's like the first 10 minutes is like this funeral, and then they're
is fine. That's fine.
But then it's like by the end of that episode, they're all the way down in King's Landing, and Missandei and gets killed. And it's like it was way too much. It needed to be split into two, and it should have been like one more episode in Winterfell as a fallout, and then okay, now we're gonna like go, and then you do another one. But that would be like weeks later, you know, which would have been fine had you given us the context. Yeah. Of everything that was going to go. Yeah. It just needed one more episode could have really helped sell the ending.
Yeah. But I mean, besides the knighting, I do feel like Jamie really does fall away side pretty bad. in the show.
Yeah, and then he runs back to Cersei and dies, and yeah, it was not great.
Hey, and that's one of the hard things about writing these books.
And he has he has that fight with Euron. It's so
the fight with Euron is maybe the most egregious thing.
It's so bad.
For me, it is. As someone who loves Book Euron so much and loves Jaime,
there is no character that is done worse in the show.
So
that bad. is a book to show, like you know, obviously like Lady Stoneheart and Young Griff don't even exist. But man, I mean, Euron,
it was bad, dude.
It's just
They interviewed the actor and he was like, "Yeah, I never read these books." Like he was like elitist about it. He's like, yeah, it's just I don't need to know what the book guy does. I got it. It's like, okay, yeah, you're a twat.
Yeah. Especially considering Euron may be like part of the absolute end game of the entire.
Oh, he's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a shadow lurking over the story at this point. So.
Okay. We already talked about the Moon Boy for all I know, but I'll read it because it's about to be the thing that gets repeated like all the time in every Jaime chapter going forward. You poor, stupid, blind, cripple fool. Must I spell out every little thing for you? Very well. Cersei is a lying whore. She's been fucking Lancel and Osmond Kettleblack and probably Moonboy for all I know. And I am the monster that they all say I am. Yes, I killed your vile son. He made himself grin. It must have been a hideous sight to see there in the torchlit gloom. And Jaime turned without a word and walked away. And Tyrion watches him go. So, like, that's still one of the most interesting things about this is that, like, Jaime doesn't call him a liar. We don't get if Jaime obviously knows he's lying or Jaime just decides to say is what it is. I mean, that's one of the things that makes POV chapters so, like, good. Like, not the bad, but it's just like, man, like, this told from Jaime's point of view.
Mm-hmm. There's always a reason, though, why George picks the POV that he does. And I think it's because that moment where he lies to Jaime is actually a bigger indictment on him. And will have more. That lie will actually eat Tyrion away more than it'll eat Jaime away.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It 100% needed to be from.
Yeah.
From Jaime. But it's one of those things that it's like the difference of book to screen where you don't feel Jaime as much. It's yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, man, I don't want to keep talking about the show, but I really don't understand the decision making of changing that in the show. I don't think it helps at all.
Yeah,
you know, like it's way more dramatic, and usually I'm not a fan when the show like ramps up the drama. I'm like, okay, we get it. But in this case, they like toned it down, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Because he never thinks about it as much. Like in the books, he thinks about it almost every chapter.
Yeah. This moment. I mean, here's what's messed up, Matt. He's more worried about Moon Boy getting with Cersei than he is that his son was murdered.
I know. Which I think maybe goes to show you that he thinks that Tyrion had nothing to do with it.
So you think he knows Tyrion's lying?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, there's a chance of it. I tend to think that Jaime walks away thinking, well, like, I imagine just crushed, but also thinking maybe I deserve this. Because the Tysha thing is, like, I mean, we kind of talked about, but the Tysha thing is horrific.
Right. Then also think about that. Is here's Jaime trying to do the right thing, telling Tyrion a truth. Even though it's about a lie, he puts himself in a vulnerable position to tell himself to tell Tyrion the truth. And what does Tyrion do in return? He lies.
Yeah. It's a massive shift in their character. Not that Tyrion doesn't lie ever.
Right. But he does, however, tell him the truth about Osmond Kettleblack and Lancel.
Mm-hmm. He does. That is true. And Moonboy.
Yeah.
Moonboy definitely happened. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Man. So it's just the dynamic. It's just so good.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll move on a little bit because we still got a lot to go here real quick. I just, there is a little bit of cool lore in this chapter about the like Megor the Cruel and just the tower itself and like that bottom floor of the Red Keep where it's so, it's basically just pitch black the entire time until people come in to torture you.
Cool, man.
Just so cool. So Megor the Cruel decreed 4 levels of the dungeon for his castle. Varys replied, in the upper level, there were large cells with common criminals may have been confined together. They had narrow windows set high in the walls. The second level has the smaller cells where highborn captives are held. They have no windows, but torches in the halls cast light throughout the bars. The third level, the cells are smaller and the doors are wood. The black cells, men call them. This is where you kept Eddard Stark before you. But there is a level lower still. Once a man is taken down to the fourth level, he never sees the sun again, nor hears a human voice, nor breathes a breath free of agonizing pain. Megor had the cells in the fourth level built for torment. They had reached the bottom of the steps. An unlighted door opened before them. This is the fourth level. Give me your hand, my lord. It is safer to walk in the darkness here. There are things you would not wish to see.
Will we see these things eventually?
Crazy.
Is this how maybe Tyrion enters the castle whenever they're sieging it later? I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, maybe it's just some sick lore and some good descriptions, but it does make you wonder. Or is it just imagery of Tyrion, this, you know, in the book, kind of monstrous looking, down on his luck guy who just, you know, told the worst lie of his life, him coming out of that? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of a symbolism of him, like, coming out of this dark place and going to do one of the worst things you can do, which is kill your family member. Man, old Varys. So this is my other takeaway, if we can talk about Varys right now.
Sure.
Dude. And we brought this up during this book, but every time I think about this scene, I just think about, man, feels like Varys definitely took a certain route at a certain time when a certain thing was happening. And we and you have questioned, when did Tywin start getting with Shay? And how did that happen? My theory has been that was kind of orchestrated and set up by Varys.
I think it has to be.
Yeah, because all he wants is to bring in young Griff. That's part of him and Illyrio's plan, right? I really do believe that Shay and Varys have some sort of off-screen partnership
arrangement.
And I don't think it was from before she got there. I think it's when she got there, he started to use her. And I think most likely with little birds, he knows that Tywin is a man of desires, even though he pretends not to be. And then he just slides Shay right into that slot. And here we are.
Yeah, because think about what this actually does to Varys. I mean, this is kind of I mean, this is like, you're like done. I mean, everyone at this point is his exit. Yeah, everyone's like, hey, he's part of this plot too.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting exit strategy. Maybe it was time for him to leave anyways, and maybe Tyrion being the focus of this helps him escape. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But I'm a little conspiratorial in the fact that it's like this very exact moment and Varys being there and the way he speaks, he just seems so sly and slimy. I wonder how much Varys had an impact on this entire situation with Shay, Tywin, and Tyrion.
Yeah, I have to agree because, I mean, yeah, like you said, the scheming, he would actually be a very interesting, maybe we could try to go back and look over his arc. That might just be a fun Patreon episode, like Varys' arc in A Storm of Swords specifically. Yeah. And like looking at every time he's mentioned, because yeah, his weaving in this book is just, I mean, he's creating chaos just like Littlefinger. Yeah. But I mean,
he is. Yeah. Earlier in the book, he and Shay, I think Tyrion like walks in. He's like, oh, are you two friendly now? And I believe, and I could be wrong, so someone can check me on this, I believe it is after Shay is upset about Sansa and Tyrion being wed. And she's like upset for a while. And then all of a sudden her and Varys are friendly and she's in a better mood now.
Yeah.
That's a really good time for him to be like, Tyrion's, you know, throwing you, but you can climb higher. You've had the young calf. Now it's time to get the bull, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, we're right at her part too here. So, did you ever like it? He cupped her cheek, remembering all the times he had done this before and all the times he'd slid his hands around her waist, squeezed her small, firm breasts, stroked her short, dark hair, touched her lips, her cheeks, her ears, all the times he had opened her with a finger to probe her secret sweetness and make her moan. Did you ever like my touch? More than anything, she said, my giant of Lannister. That was the worst thing you could have said, sweetling. And Jesus. Then he slid his hand under his father's chain and twisted. The links tightened, digging into her neck. For hands of gold are always cold, but a woman's hands are warm, he said. He gave cold hands another twist as the warm ones beat away his tears.
Cold hands. Tyrion's cold hands confirmed?
Could be. But peak, I mean, that's just.
Yeah, dude.
Peak writing.
That's
he gave cold hands another twist as the warm ones beat away his tears. That might be like just the imagery of that. I mean, the show crushed it. I mean, that's why Peter Dinklage started winning like award after award.
Yeah. That's some bars right there. It has to be one of the better lines, maybe one of the more underrated lines, in fact. And you could go on and on. Like, if you hadn't been Hand of the King, he never gets to this position. None of this ever happens. So there's a lot to dig into right there. But also, in this moment, I remember when I first read it, I was like, yeah, killer. Awesome. Yes. But now that we've read through the series and we see what it does to him.
So the real question about Shay is, now that we've finished the Shay storyline and we've been talking about it for years, not knowing it. I like what you said about Varys. So do you think she was planted there? Was she planted at the battle, or did she just happen to be there?
I think she just happened to be there.
And then both Tywin and Varys, once she arrives. So Tyrion just does the wrong thing, brings her to court. Because a lot of people think, oh, Tywin did it to use as leverage on Tyrion. And then, because Tyrion does the one thing he tells him not to do, but then maybe Varys gets his hands on her and everything changes.
Yeah. To me, it just has Varys meddling all over it. Especially because, I mean, he kills Kevin Lannister at the end of Dance of Dragons. Like, he is all about destroying the Lannister family.
Yeah. So he sees an opportunity and changes it.
Yeah, I think he uses anyone he can that's in that Red Keep.
Yeah. So maybe Tyrion's the one who kills Varys.
Now that would be interesting.
In the show, obviously Varys dies because he betrays Daenerys, which I wasn't necessarily like super against when it happened. It kind of just felt like they needed to kill somebody. But it's like this, like the Shay thing kind of does mirror the Tysha thing a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you find out that Tyrion finds out that Varys was the one who did kind of push her towards Tywin for his own schemes, and then he already killed her, and then, to like, you know what I mean? And then, like, book Tyrion is very darker, but down a much darker path.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how Tyrion killing Varys is not something I would have, but there's a potential.
Yeah, and also, you know, if Tyrion continues down this villain arc, he could just stop taking any responsibility for anything, which he already does in Dance of Dragons. But, you know, he might see Varys and say, you know, if you hadn't interfered, I would have never killed a woman I loved. I would have never killed my father. He probably would have.
Right, because she is so far, like, done with Tyrion. So that I think Tyrion.
Yeah, she testified against him, right? So,
yeah.
But, you know, he could cope with that and then take it out on Varys. I do think that there's also a chance that Daenerys does burn him. I don't think that's something George gave the guys, but my thought is that he puts young Griff on the throne, an imposter, and Daenerys comes in and, you know, wipes him off the map. But
yeah,
who really knows how that would end? But yeah, I kind of like that Tysha parallel. Yeah.
Yeah, Joe. Okay, and then it ends with something we've actually talked about quite a lot, which is actually the big scene. So, I mean, I'll read it, which is His father pursed his lips. There was no reason for that. She learned her place and had been had well paid for her day's work. I seem to recall, I suppose the steward sent her on her way. I never thought to inquire. On her way where? Wherever whores go. Tyrion's finger clenched. The crossbow whanged just as Lord Tywin started to rise. The bolt slammed into him above the groin, and he sat back down with a grunt. The quarrel had sunk deep, right into the fletching. Blood seeped out around the shaft, dripping down onto his pubic hair and over his bare thighs. You shot me, he said incredulously, with his eyes glassy with shock. You were always quick to grasp a situation, my lord, Tyrion said. That must be why you're hand of the king. You are no son of mine. Now that's where you're wrong, father. Why I believe I'm you writ small. Do me a kindness now and die quickly. I have a ship to catch. You know, his father did not shit gold in the end. And a lot of people point to this being the like moment where he confirms the Tyrion Targaryen theory, which I and you, Jimmy, very much do not believe to be the case whatsoever.
I think that there's a lot there to dig into until you start looking at the dates and you realize that it can't be. I like the fact that George put all those details in there, and you and I have always said that sometimes George puts stuff in place that he may or may not use later. There's a chance maybe that there is a chance that's what George was thinking about doing. And then as he wrote more and more, he said, not really. Because early on, I mean, he does talk about the dragon dreams and stuff, which I already talked about today. But it's kind of a red herring. It's fun. It doesn't do any harm to the story or anything.
But, well, if he was a Targaryen, I think it would do a lot of harm to the story.
Oh, if he was a Targaryen, it would suck. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the whole point. The whole point is his relationship with his father. Like Jaime and Cersei's relationship with her father is not nearly as important as Tyrion's is with Tywin.
Yeah, I think if anything, and I know this isn't the case, so people don't yell at me, but Cersei and Jaime being Aerys is actually almost more interesting because Jaime would have killed his father and Tyrion would be the only true child that Tywin has, but Tywin's dead. So it doesn't like, that's not the case anyways. It doesn't work out. None of it works out. But even if if George did that, which he's not going to, it would kind of suck because Tywin's dead. So it's like, you know, he's not a Targaryen.
Yeah, he's not a Targaryen. Okay. Well, any other last thoughts here?
From here on out, reading Tyrion chapters are going to be really sad and depressing. So,
it's going to be a while before we get to Tyrion. He is chapter, I think he's, let's see. Tyrion 1 is chapter 1 of A Dance with Dragons. So he would not even be in A Feast for Crows.
Yeah, he's not in Feast. Nope, he sure isn't. And that's what pissed a lot of people off. They waited 2003. They waited, 7 or 8 years for a Tyrion chapter? But now it's been like 12. So
Tyrion will actually now be chapter 6.
Oh, that's way better.
Yeah, way better. So, I mean, we'll be talking about Tyrion very shortly.
That makes me happy.
This but year also, instead of in like 4.
And yeah, and
at our pace.
Yeah. Well, chapter 6, maybe it's next year, but it does feel good to know this will be pretty fresh and then we'll see Tyrion. Because if you do the standard reread, you're gonna, it takes a while to get through Feast.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 78, Samwell 5.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee podcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.